This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Mike Maggio is here, and he has so many facets to his life and personality. You will love to hear it. But now, an opening poem.
If you go. If you go, my eyes will swiftly shatter. My tongue, unoiled by your easy lips, will rust tight. My skin dust the floor in a flurry of white lament. My fingers lose their memory. My body, dangling from your shrill absence, will knot and fray. And how will I grapple the raging room?
The raging room, Mike Maggio. I'm Grace Cavalieri. If you were to be asked, what are you writing about? I mean, looking at your canon of work, you have so many books out. What is the theme that you're always addressing?
Well, I think there are two. One of them, of course, is politics. I'm known here in D.C. as a political poet. I was known as a political poet in L.A., and a lot of my work, fiction and poetry, deals with politics. But I also deal a lot with relationships. And, you know, I'll read some poems. There's a poem I'm going to read that deals with my children. And some of it's about love, some of it's about heartache.
And it's never ending, is it? As long as you put two people in a room, you have a poem.
That's right.
So let's hear one. Mike Maggio at the Library of Congress.
Okay, so I'm going to read, this is a newer poem a couple of years ago. I was diagnosed with leukemia. So I started writing a lot about cancer, and I had to have a blood transfusion. I was treated at NIH, which is the gold standard of medical industry, I think. So I had a blood transfusion, and that made me think about different things. So this poem is called Blood Transfusion. Now that I've had a blood transfusion, I keep asking myself, who am I now? This blood pulsing through my veins from David or Henry or maybe Mary, what history does it contain? What scarlet secrets are now an intimate part of my chemistry? Was David black or white? Chinese or Hispanic? Arab or Jew? Was Mary Christian, agnostic, atheist? And Henry, was he some dark, sexy lover, or just some schmo yearning for his Marilyn Monroe?
Mm.
How does this blood affect my makeup? How do I account for it in my family tree? When they ask me on some official form, has anyone in your past ever had such and such disease? What do I say? What truth now lies within the walls of these veins? And when I die and stand before my judgment, how will I atone for my unknown deeds?
Mike, that is wonderful. Only a poet would do that. And the rest would just be thinking, how am I feeling?
Yeah, and I was not feeling very well.
And you are feeling well now.
Oh, I am, yes. And I am in remission.
Do we have a lot of poems around that?
We do. We have, I did not bring them with me, but there is a poem about that I wrote to my doctor.
Certainly spur a lot of thinking.
Yeah,
it surely would.
It did.
Well, that is another way you can describe your poetry. It is introspective. Philosophical.
Yes.
And I would like everyone to know who you are. You have, as I said, many facets. Fiction, poetry, travel, translations, and reviews in dozens of magazines. And you're the author of 8 books, including Oranges from Palestine. Is that where your Arabic poems are?
My Arabic poems are based in Saudi Arabia and Jordan. I actually have never been to Palestine, though my wife is Palestinian.
And so why the title, Oranges from Palestine? It's a gorgeous title.
It is a love poem written before I knew my wife about a Palestinian woman. So that's, and I can read that. I wasn't planning to, but I can. It's a
And democracy, M-O-C-K, we know what that thrust is. The Keepers, his novel, The Wizard and the White House, was released not too long ago, 2 years ago, and a new book, a novella, entitled The Appointment, and that is just this year. What is a novella?
A novella is a short novel, or you can look at it as a long short story.
And what is it about?
This novella is about an aging professor who is coming to the end of his life and actually gets killed in the subway by a youth gang. But then he tries to find himself, and it's a very Kafkaesque novel, but it's a very introspective. Psychological.
Sounds very, yeah. Very interesting. Has it been well read yet? It's brand new.
It's brand new. It just came out at the beginning of this month.
Mm.
But those who have read it have told me how interesting it is, how much it's making them think. They have to go back and forth. It keeps them interested. So it's a page turner.
You have so many edges to your mind. Let us hear another edge. Let's hear a poem.
Okay, here's a poem called Replacing a Window. I'm replacing the kitchen window, weathered and worn, the glass fogs during winter. The crack in the corner has slowly split and splayed. My children offer advice. One says, you need to measure from jam to jam. Another worries, you don't have the right tools. You never have the right tools, she repeats angrily. The third one says, wisely, better get a handyman. We argue in our usual way, and I let them win, or perhaps they prevail, I don't know which. Still, I wonder, as I gaze through the aged glass, these abrupt adults, these saplings that have sprouted into sudden maturity. How long before they foster these self-same arguments, one day, when their own windows wither and wane?
Mike Maggio at the Library of Congress. Let's have another. We're just getting to know you.
Okay, I'll read. This is kind of a fun one.
These have not been published in a book?
The ones I've just read, no. The first one I read is from my book, Garden of Rain, and I will read another from there. But this is from an unpublished manuscript of collage poems. And normally I don't write rhyme poems, but this one would not have it any other way. So I finally gave in. And it's kind of a fun poem. It's called Hair. Let's talk about hair. 15-hour wear, light and dreamy as air. Sometimes you just don't spare. Without a tussle or a tear, through rain, sweat, and glare, barely clothed or fully bare, or in between without the flare. Time to remove the nair in downtown Buenos Aires. It's simply, simply there, right straight through that frizzed-up scare. So please don't stop and stare, or curl up, or otherwise care. It's nothing more than Matt Lumiere getting down right here in Times Square.
If you read that in all one breath, it could be hip-hop.
I never thought of that.
It could be. Completely, yes. And one another.
Okay. How about a political one?
This looks like a good one.
Yeah, this is something I wrote a couple of years ago when Snowden was, doing his thing. And it's called My Confession to the NSA. And it has an epigraph, Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Don't bother culling through my life. You see, my telephone calls are quite mundane. My emails consist of routine requests, everyday replies, and endless bites of spam, spoofing, and phishing events. And if you look at my snail mail, you'll soon discover nothing but bills, an occasional subscription notice, and mounds of ads and solicitations. Fodder for recycle bins. Now, it's true I've demonstrated my share of dissent. I marched against Vietnam and dared to dabble in communist doctrine. I flirted with the RCP, danced openly with them in MacArthur Park. Yes, I admit, I consorted with Karl Marx, slept with Mao Zedong, philandered with Fidel and Che. Even now, I'm a registered member of the DSA. And when George Bush waged war on Iraq and the rest of us, I stood on the National Mall in sub-zero degrees and raised my voice in hallowed dissent. And let's not forget, I'm a member of that dreaded sect known as Islam. I attend the mosque, admittedly on occasion, and have the nerve to criticize the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Even when the Iranians stormed our embassy back in 1979, I applauded their audacity to defy the great Satan, to stand up to the impudent forces of imperialism. And yes, I confess, Edward Snowden, in my eyes, is a true American hero, a patriot, a defender of the Constitution and its imagined way of life. Yes, I admit it. I confess I am fully conscious of my crime. I am fully aware that what I learned growing up, fables of freedom, equality, and the pursuit of happiness, were nothing more than fairy tales and lies. That the boogeyman you foisted upon us, the communist threat, the Ayatollah, the Islamic scourge, were mere scrims blowing in the wind. But these are mere trifles. I'm an adult now. I'm man enough now to stop believing in Santa Claus, to know that the American dream is just another legend, a marketing campaign created at the intersection of Pennsylvania and K. And you, O omniscient one, O NSA, O keeper of the book that will be read to me on Judgment Day, are just doing your job, doing your best in this best of all possible worlds. As I tell you loud and clear in a voice for all to hear, I am now and have always been, in the name of our forefathers and of our sons and of your unholy spirit, amen.
That is one powerful poem, Mike, because my quarrel with narratives that try to give historicity or anything with detail in it is that they turn very prosy. But this did not. It's very tight. It moves like mercury, and it is so passionate and so authentic. Where have you published that, or will you?
That is not published, except on my own website.
When I first met you on the page, it was in Poets Against the War, I think, or one of those books. So you've been obviously an activist for a long time.
For most of my life.
Yes. And to the good. You had a time in your life when you lived in Arabia.
Yes, Saudi Arabia.
Tell us about how you got there and why.
Well, I was teaching English as a second language. First of all, I have a degree in linguistics. And when you have a degree in linguistics and you want to teach, you really want to have an experience overseas in another language. So I studied Arabic, and then I went to the Middle East to live and to learn. And it was a wonderful experience. I spent 5 years there. I did live at one point during the invasion of Kuwait, which was very surrealistic because I lived in the airport where I worked, and it was the staging point for the war. I mean, we heard the jets taking off every night.
At this time, were you literate in Arabic? How long did it take you?
I was becoming, I was literate in that I had studied it formally in at the university, but I was learning, how to use it, how to speak it, how to listen constantly. And of course, at that point, I got married, and
wife speaks Arabic.
Yes.
How hard is it?
It's not as hard as you would think.
It's as hard as I would think.
It looks like a strange, but it's an alphabet. It's not like Chinese, which has characters. Oh. So once you learn the alphabet and you learn to string it together, it makes sense, just like English.
But every Somebody I know who speaks Arabic speaks a different kind. It's not Farsi, right?
No, Farsi is not Arabic. Okay. It's not even a Semitic language.
Oh.
It is actually an Indo-European language.
Friend speaks Farsi. Well, that is so interesting. And you met your wife there?
I met my wife there. She's Palestinian, so mm-hmm. I actually understand Saudi dialect, Palestinian dialect, Egyptian dialect.
Well, this is very valuable, and I don't think you're actually marketing this enough. I'm saying that. I know it's a commercial word, but you know the world needs it more than ever before, and you have it to give. So let's begin by hearing a poem in English and in Arabic.
Okay, do you want the Arabic first?
No, the English first.
The English first. Okay. So this is a poem by a very famous Iraqi poet. Her name is Lamia Abbas Amara. She lives in San Diego right now. She was in exile here during the Saddam years, and she just stayed here. But she is very famous across the Arab world, and I had the opportunity to work with her on translations. So we worked on these, and we worked on some of my own poems that were translated into Arabic.
Well, where are they?
I believe they were published in Baghdad, and I know somebody else translated them recently and published them in Egypt.
We need to publish them here.
And the Arabic ones?
Yes, with the English.
Oh, that would be a good project.
Yeah, it's a very good project. Okay, and now we're going to hear an English poem first and then an Arabic translation.
So this is called, and Lamia is known as the poet of love. So this is called If the Fortune Teller Had Told Me. If the fortune teller had told me that one day you would be my love, I would not have written love poems for any man. Silently, I pray that you will remain mine. If the fortune teller had told me that I would touch the moon's splendid face, I would not have dallied with the brook's pebbles, would not have strung my hopes from counterfeit pearls. If the fortune teller had told me that my love would be a prince on a ruby horse, the world would have bound me in her feathered tresses, and I would never have dreamt of dying. If the fortune teller had told me that my love in the midst of the snowy night would offer me the sun in his hands, my lungs would not have become so feeble, and yesterday's grief would not weigh so heavy on my eyes. If the fortune teller had told me that I would encounter you in this labyrinth, I would never have cried for anything. I would have gathered my tears, all my tears, for the day when you abandoned me.
So lyrical. And I wonder if it's going to sound that way in Arabic.
It sounds so much better in Arabic. And I just hope I can do it justice.
Well, we'll trust you on that because we're going to just listen to the beauty of it.
So in Arabic, lo and batni al-araf, if the fortune teller had told me. Lo and batni al-araf, innaka yomin satakunu habibi, lem aktub ghazalan fi rajalan, khrasa asalli latadall habibi. Lo and batni al-araf, إني سألمس وجه القمر العالي لم ألعب بحس الغدران ولم أنظم من خرز المالي لو أنبأتني الأعراف إن حبيبي سيكون أميرا فوق حصان من ياقوت شدتني الدنيا بجدائلها الشجري فلم أحلم إني سأموت لو أنبأتني الأعراف أن حبيبي في ليل الثلج سيعتيني بيدي الشمس لم يجمد رئتي ولم تكبر في عيني هموم الأمس لو أنبأتني الأعراف إني سألاقيك بهذا التيح lem apki shein fidunya wajamatu demu ai kullu dam'i liyomin kad tahjurni fi.
The afra, if I had, is that repeated exactly like that?
Yes.
Because I was listening for that.
If I, you mean if the if the fortune teller had told me?
Yeah.
It's lo and bat nil araf, yes.
And so it starts every stanza.
Yes.
Do you and your wife speak English at home?
We do. There was a time when we spoke Arabic, but because of my kids, I wanted them to learn.
Mainstream.
Yeah.
But they can speak a little Arabic?
They can speak a little. They understand everything.
Well, that's great.
But they don't.
It's a good
really
beginning,
speak.
Though.
Yeah.
It's a great beginning. So, Mike, let's go back to your other poems, and I would love to hear another of either your new set, or this is a recently published book.
Yes, this is from Garden of Rain, and this actually is one of my favorite poems. It's a narrative, and it's called The Master Fitter's Apprentice. My master fitter, I've seen your mannequins and pins, the way a chestnut-stained fabric gently drapes your rigid arms as you bend and crouch and kneel. Here, in this enchanted room filled with wicked possibilities, I've watched you measure and cut, envied the soft cloth passing through your firm fingers, coveted the barren form's frigid habit to welcome your tenuous touch. From this dark, bitter corner where I gaze and await your command, I followed you furtively, the trace of your ring, now sparkling, now dull, a curious truce between your secret eyes resting briefly on my brazen shoulder, and your heavy brow waxed by days and years of wonder and woe. But for your bobbins, your buttons and lace, as wondrous as a Spanish galleon lost underwater, crammed with gold and silver, muslin and aged tapestry, I would ask, what of the smile that once graced your face, the golden threads that wove the hushed yearnings bound beyond your distant eyes? My master fitter, I will bring you bolts of cotton and silk, spools of dappled velvet and sheer black satin. I will lay rolls of organza at your feet. I will unfold the soft chiffon on your table and joyfully smooth it out for you to render the silver stitches the restive embroidery that conceals your ruthless charm. My master fitter, the moonlight stains your naked arm. I feel a tremble rise up through your silken skin, and I fear the wedding pleats will slowly ungather.
That is the voice of Mike Maggio at the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. He's an assistant adjunct professor at NOVA, which is a community college in Northern Virginia. And in Northern Virginia, he's also the vice president of the Poetry Society of Virginia, very active in making new things happen for everyone there, an associate editor of the Potomac Review, graduate of George Mason University's graduate program in creative writing, and a practicing poet. He also knows about computers, which is a good thing. What are you working on now?
I'm actually working on a Gothic novel.
Really? There's no end to you. Tell me about this.
So it takes place in a dark, abandoned abbey. There's a wicked old nun, which I think is coming out of my childhood. And there's a woman in distress, a damsel in distress, which you must have in your Gothic novel. And it is narrated.
What's the title?
It's called Him, so far. And it's narrated by the devil, which I'm finding very interesting.
I was thinking Wicked Possibilities is a wonderful line from your last poem, but it would fit your next book.
It would,
yes. It's a great title. So is it fun to imagine that?
It is. And, you know, I get up every day at 5 o'clock, or 4 o'clock sometimes, and write. And the things that come to me are just incredible. So.
If the last poem we heard, if you were to use that in your classroom, which I know you never would. What would you point out in that poem to teach the students about the art of poetry? Let's just open up the book and look at that page.
Okay.
What would you use? What would you tell them? Would it be imagery? Would it be tone? Rhythm? Just what do you find in the poem?
Well, first of all, I would have them read it and try to understand what the story is.
Literally.
But then I would have them go and look at, you know, this is written in couplets. And there's a reason. It was not originally written in couplets, but there is a reason why I rewrote it and put it in couplets. And that's because couplets are usually used for love poems. And this, in a sense, is a kind of love poem. There is this apprentice that is infatuated with this master fitter that she's working for. So it's a love poem, or maybe an unrequited love poem. So I'd have them, you know, analyze that and look at the language and the images and how that and the tone and how that informs the narrative, how it tells us about who this person is that's speaking.
What do you think your students think of you?
According to the evaluations I get, they love my class. They find it interesting. They tell me how afraid they are to take a writing class. How dreading they are to that it's going to be boring. I try very much to make my classes active.
I saw that for myself. Now, can we have a final poem?
Sure. I'm going to read one more from here. This is kind of a spiritual poem. Well, let me just read the last one, which is kind of my attempt to write a Sufi poem, a very feeble attempt. It's called The Birds Begin at Four. The birds begin at four. I have heard them where she lies, the brook's secret murmur, the blissful sighs of the cricket's song. When she breathes, the stars whisper. When she smiles, the sky is a field of ancient poppies, swaying in the moonlight, praying in the moonlight. I have heard the birds sing where she lies. Listen to your soul. Let life's mysteries fill you with song. In the deep, cool morning, where she lies, where she lies.
The voice of Mike Maggio. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation and Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue and Diane Welbin Parks. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.